we promised Dr. Malcolm Davis, who is a senior analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. He specialises in space policy and defence strategy. In January, he published an article in The Strategist titled Space and Australia, Opportunities in the Second Trump Administration. He joins us now on The Space Show by telephone to discuss the article and how things are shaping up now that Donald Trump is about 110 days into his presidency and a few days after Trump's proposed NASA budget has been published. Welcome to The Space Show, Malcolm.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And in your article, you emphasise the importance of enhancing cooperation between Australia and the United States. So could you provide us an overview of the current state of the partnership, that is, as it was in January?
Sure. I mean, I think that what you see is Australia has a very positive and productive relationship with the United States in terms of space cooperation, both in terms of the defence side of things, which is what very much I focus on in my work, but also in terms of the civil and the commercial side of space. In terms of defence, obviously Australia is part of the Five Eyes group for intelligence sharing, and that means we're also part of the Combined Space Operations Initiative, or CSPO, as it's called. And so we're working with the Americans, the other Five Eyes partners, as well as other states in CSPO, that include Japan, France, Germany, and a few others, to do collaboration on intelligence sharing in space, on space domain awareness. One of the aspects of that is that Australia is due to host a new deep space advanced radar capability, or DARC, out at Exmouth, Western Australia. And that will allow us to monitor activities all the way up to geo. So we're cooperating a lot with the Americans on space capability development, on doctrinal development. And one of the new things you've seen in Australian defence policy documents in recent years is a greater willingness to talk about not just space domain awareness, but also space control, the ability to deny an adversary an ability to attack our space systems or the space systems of our allies. And so that's something that Australia probably will be considering in the next few years. In the commercial and the civil side of things, you are seeing some really important steps that have been taken recently in terms of technology sharing agreements that allow the United States to launch from Australia. And I think that's important because it opens up Australia as a really critical launch site given its proximity to the equator. Changes in ITAR, which allow sharing of critical US technologies with Australia, that includes space technologies, and also finally changes in the missile technology and control regime that will give us greater access to advanced US space capabilities. So all of this, I think, boosts our role in space with the Americans. It sees Australia playing a much more important role in burden sharing in orbit, and it opens up opportunities for the commercial space sector in this country to work with the Americans and to benefit from accessing technologies, as well as developing our own technologies that the Americans can then access themselves. So it's, you know, it goes both ways in that sense.
Okay. Now, you mention in your article that space is likely to be a greater priority for the Trump administration than it was under Biden and Harris. Now, 4 months later, we learn that the overall proposed NASA budget would be cut by 24% from last year. How do you foresee this influencing United States space policy and what the implications might be for Australia?
Well, that cut is a real disappointment, I must admit that. When that was announced, I think a lot of people in the space policy community, their jaws fell on the floor because whilst that cut is being justified on the basis of revitalizing the US efforts to return to the moon and certainly, to put it bluntly, beat China back to the moon, the price we're paying is a massive cut in space science, in critical mission areas, in terms of things like the Nancy Roman Space Telescope, funding for Hubble and James Webb Space Telescope, funding for research into new propulsion technologies, and it's a very swinging cut to space in the civil and scientific aspects. It also sees a cut and a cancellation eventually of the Space Launch System, which I think is a wise move given how cost ineffective that rocket is compared to commercial systems that are on the horizon like SpaceX Starship. And it sees a cut to Artemis and also the Lunar Gateway space station. So I do think that what you're going to see is NASA basically transferring the transportation aspects of their space business. In other words, getting off the rock, getting into space, getting from space through to the moon, transferring that across to the commercial side of things. And NASA focusing on how we get to the moon and then how we get onto Mars. And it really does boil down to competition with China. I think that the Americans are very now much aware of China's determination to be the dominant space power in the 21st century and to replace the United States as the dominant space actor. They want to see, China wants to see the U.S. Lead in space ended and replaced by a Chinese lead. And I think that the Trump administration is determined not to have this happen. So what they're doing is effect a Doge cut. They're going through NASA and cutting out areas that they see as not critical to beating China back to the moon and then going to Mars. But sadly, unfortunately, I think that they're going too far in cutting space science because that undermines the international credibility in many respects of NASA.
And that brings us to the issue of Landsat, which is a long-running program. This year's Australian federal budget had this to say about the Landsat Next project, and we have a reading from the budget.
Australia has ongoing and streamlined access to data from Landsat satellites, including the next-generation Landsat Next satellites due for launch in 2030-31. Landsat Next will give access to high-quality land imaging data to support key Australian industries including mining and geological resource exploration, climate monitoring, disaster planning and response, agriculture, and ensure water security. Geoscience Australia will deliver an upgraded Alice Springs satellite ground station and deliver new data processing, data analytics, and science capabilities in support of Landsat Next. Geoscience Australia is also advancing the Australia-United States partnership on the Landsat Next satellite imaging program, including by signing arrangements with the United States government and the United States Geological Survey.
As you know, Malcolm, Landsat technology is developed by NASA and operated by the United States Geological Survey. So this is a reading from NASA's budget proposal, or I should say Trump's proposal.
Yeah. Earth science, -$1,161 million. The budget eliminates funding for low-priority climate monitoring satellites and restructures the gold-plated $2 billion Landsat Next mission while NASA studies more affordable ways to maintain the continuity of Landsat imagery, which is used by natural resource managers, states, and industry.
And this from the proposed Geological Survey budget.
U.S. Geological Survey, USGS. The USGS budget has long been eroded by inflation, but Trump's request represents a landslide. More than one-third of the $1.6 billion agency would vanish if Congress approves a proposed $564 million cut. Not all of that proposed reduction comes as a surprise. Science reported last month that the agency's $304 million ecosystem mission area was preparing to be eliminated. This division hosts the agency's biological and ecological research, relevant to efforts such as monitoring water quality, protecting endangered species, and predicting landscape impacts from climate change. The administration request says USGS should focus on achieving dominance in energy and critical minerals.
Of course, none of this may come to pass, but should Australia be rethinking its investment in Landsat Next? Malcolm?
Well, look, I think that, you know, your last comment, I think, is really important here because Congress gets to say on budgetary issues, as is laid down in the US Constitution. So this NASA-like budget, or the skinny budget as it's called, that the Trump administration has put out that has shocked everyone is Trump's budget. It's not Congress's budget. Now, there is an issue, obviously, that a lot of people in Congress, particularly on the Republican side, are beholden to Trump and so therefore may not push back against this. But there's also a lot of Republicans and the Democrats that will push back on this hard because, you know, the investment in these sorts of programs, if that's taken away, is going to hurt their congressional districts in terms of investment and job growth and so forth. So I wouldn't get sort of too panic struck at this point, thinking that everything has been cut as of now. Having said that, you ask the question, what happens if it actually does go through and it actually is cut? But firstly, it kind of highlights the somewhat stupid decision by the Minister of Industry, Science and Resources in 2023 to cancel the National Science Space Mission for Earth Observation, NSMEO, for the purposes of budgetary repair, because basically that mission would have given us four satellites that could have essentially filled some of the gap left by Landsat Next. Now we don't have NSMEO, and now we may not have Landsat Next, so we have nothing. So what do we do? I think that what we need to do is make the case to the Australian government, to the Albanese government that's now been re-elected, is that if we are serious about using space-based Earth observation for supporting national interests, then we need sovereign capability. Now, what sort of sovereign capability can we get? Is four large satellites the best way to go, or should we get, you know, a constellation of smaller satellites that may be greater in number but are more cost-effective? I think a case could be made to the federal government that given what Trump has suggested and given that we cancelled NSMEO back in 2023, there should be another look at sovereign Earth observation capabilities to provide that whole-of-nation service and at least fill some of the gap that we have now. We can certainly go to other commercial providers that can offer Earth observation services. You know, ESA's Copernicus is very good, for example. But I do think that it would be a bad mistake if, as a result of NSMEO being cancelled and Landsat Next being cancelled, we end up with nothing, because then we are facing serious gaps in our ability to do Earth observation for everything from urban planning and agriculture through to dealing with threat of bushfires and other extreme weather events. So that's where I would go with that.
On the Space Show, we are in discussion with Dr. Malcolm Davis, who is a senior analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. Now, Malcolm, turning our attention away from NASA, and given the potential expansion of the United States Space Force to address counter-space threats from nations like Russia and China, what role can Australia play in supporting these efforts?
I think we can play a really big role. When you look at defence planning documents like the National Defence Strategy that came out last year and the Defence Strategic Review the year before, and even going back to the previous governments, the previous coalition governments, Defence Strategic Update, all of them are now talking about space policy in a much more sophisticated and mature manner. It used to be the case, you know, when I joined ASPE, for example, in 2016 and said that I wanted to do space policy as my area of focus and went up to defence and spoke to people there, the mindset was, well, why do we need to talk about space policy? The Americans give us everything. That was actually the words that were said to me by a defence official at the time. If you now look at how defence is thinking about space, it's far more sophisticated, far more mature. It's about how Australia can provide sovereign capabilities, not just for space launch, the sort of things that we're going to see with Gilmore Space Technologies and coming out of Whaler's Way and so forth, but also in terms of cooperation with the Americans on everything from small satellite technologies through to space domain awareness through to space control. And that space control and the space domain domain awareness aspects are really critical in terms of how the ADF's Space Command can work with the U.S. Space Force. The U.S. Space Force, I think, is responding finally to the threat posed by China and Russia in terms of counter-space capabilities. You now have the commander of the U.S. Space Force now saying, we need to do warfighting in space. We have to have that warfighting capability. And I think that's a recognition that space as a domain is not a serene and peaceful global common that is untouched by terrestrial rivalry below. It is a contested, congested, and potentially a war-fighting environment. Our adversaries are developing a full range of counter-space capabilities, and they have every intention at the beginning of the next war or prior to the next war of using those capabilities to deny us access to our critical space support. So we have to be able to deter that threat. We have to be able to defend against that threat, and that means we have to work with the Americans and with others, Japanese, the South Koreans, the Indians, and so forth, to be able to defend our critical space infrastructure. The space control comes into the fore here. We have to have systems and capabilities that can defeat a counter-space threat without creating massive clouds of space debris. We don't want to do that. So we are talking soft kill capabilities here rather than hard kill. But these sorts of things are now being looked at. I think you will probably see more detail coming out next year with the 2026 National Defense Strategy and Integrated Investment Program. And you'll maybe start to see some sort of investment in acquiring the sorts of capabilities that could allow us to do this. I suspect it will start with a ground-based space electronic warfare capability, but could progress through to some sort of space-based capability that we'd develop with the Americans, perhaps under AUKUS Pillar 2. And that's probably, I think, that's where I'd see that going.
Malcolm, in your article, you advocate for the development of sovereign space launch capabilities in Australia. Now, we've already touched a little bit on this topic, but what are the strategic advantages to Australia for us doing that?
Look, it's very clear. I mean, Australia's geographical location is ideal for sovereign launch. So the north of our continent is reasonably close to the equator. So a rocket launch from Cape York Peninsula, for example, in northern Queensland, gains energy from the Earth's rotation. And so that means it's cheaper to get payload into orbit from a location closer to the equator than it is further away. So that's one aspect. If you look further south at Whalers Way, for example, which is being operated by Southern Launch, they're ideally placed for launching payloads in the sun-synchronous and polar orbits, which is, you know, preferable for intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance satellites. So we have the best of both worlds. We've got northern launch sites that are great for equatorial orbits and that can benefit from the Earth's rotational energy. We've got southern launches, launch sites at Whalers Way that can deploy payloads into sun-synchronous and polar orbit missions. That's an ideal location in that regard. Obviously, Bowen in Queensland, where Gilmore Space Technology will be launching, is really very effective in that regard, in the sense that they can benefit from that Earth's rotational energy and launch straight out into the Pacific. So they've got an ideal launch vector there. And I think that, you know, looking beyond the geography, we have the technological infrastructure, the expertise, the skill base, and the economic base to be able to do sovereign launch, to be able to build launch vehicles, to be able to build launch sites, and to operate our own launch vehicles, to launch our own satellites from our own launch sites, as well as launch our satellites of our partners and allies. So, you know, we have so many advantages that I think that if this nation were to turn away from sovereign launch, we'd be absolute fools to do so.
Now, Australia is set to have the United States send a lunar rover to the moon next year. So how can Australian commercial space companies further embed themselves into this, what's going to be a revamped Artemis program?
Yeah, well, look, I think that you know, one of the things we need to be thinking about is how can Australia directly support Artemis, both in terms of Artemis 2 and 3, that NASA will be running with the SLS and Orion and so forth, but also subsequent missions that will be obviously based on commercial infrastructure. And I think that here's where we need to think about space logistics. We need to be starting to think about how, firstly, we can operate on and around the moon in cislunar space to support operations on the surface. The lunar rover, Ruva as it's called, which is being created by the AROS Corporation, will be really important in terms of finding you know, potentially useful resources in the lunar regolith. That's going to directly contribute towards establishing a permanent human presence at the lunar South Pole, and that's really where we need to be going. We can't just be going back to the moon to do flags and footprints again like Apollo. We need to go back to the moon to stay and to build up a permanent and expanding and self-sustaining human presence on the lunar surface. That is the future, and I think from my perspective, that is even more important than going to Mars, because the moon is the stepping stone to the rest of the solar system. It's the stepping stone to accessing space resources close to Earth that we can then utilize to bootstrap and develop new capabilities for utilizing space for returning profit and generating wealth. If we want to build, for example, space-based solar power satellites, then we need to be using lunar resources to support that, to be able to build those large structures in space. So to me, the moon is really important. Australia has a really important role to play in supporting the logistics of going back to the moon. But more so than that, I think Australia needs to be part of NASA's Artemis program in every sense of the word. And that includes having Australian astronauts on the lunar surface with the Australian flag on their spacesuit. We should no longer have the situation where only Americans get to stand on the lunar surface. We should be having Australian astronauts on the lunar surface. That would be one of the most inspiring things that this nation could do for the next generation of thinkers about space, be it engineers or policy people or, you know, future business people in the space sector. Having an Australian person standing on the lunar surface looking back at Earth would be something amazing.
And we've already seen how Catherine Bennell Pegg has been touring schools and talking to young people and hopefully inspiring them.
Exactly. And look, what they need to do is get her up on a mission. You know, it's no good just having an Australian astronaut that never gets into space. She needs to be put up on a US mission to the International Space Station, or fly on a Dragon that's put launched by SpaceX to get to the International Space Station, or get her to the moon as part of Artemis. And she should be basically the lead astronaut in an Australian astronaut corps that is built up over time, so that we do have a body of astronauts that can work with NASA astronauts or Japanese astronauts or Indian astronauts and expand that human presence up on the high frontier.
And what support would be needed from the government to facilitate not just this issue, but the Australian launch industry and so on? What would be needed from the government?
Well, a bit of vision might help. a bit of willingness to take risks. A bit of willingness to actually look beyond their perspective and see that there is a future for this country in space. I think that at the moment the government is not prepared to do that, unfortunately, even though there is massive and overwhelming support from the commercial sector for Australia to take a more ambitious approach, and there's strong support within the defence community for us to do more in space. I think what we in the space community need to do is get the message across to government that space really matters for this nation. There's an area where we can grow as a nation in terms of generating prosperity and return of wealth that then feeds into the economy and generates new approaches to building a high technology economy, generates new jobs and so forth. So really, you know, yes, the government is failing in this, but the failing is the space policy community and the commercial space sector community basically saying we need to do a better job in convincing the government that there is a case for space.
We've already discussed Landsat Next, and other than that, the Australian budget has cut space investment, as we've already noted. Now, I couldn't find any reference to the Australian Space Agency in any of the volumes of the budget papers this year. What steps should we take to develop a comprehensive national space strategy that serves our needs without conflicting with those of other nations such as the United States? And it did occur to me while we were talking about individual space launch capability that if we developed our own capabilities, would this be seen by Trump as going against his America First mantra?
No, I don't think so. And I think you pick up an important point about the budget. I mean, I'm currently working on the space section of ASPE's cost of defence report. And I went through both the defence public budget statement and the Department of Industry, Science and Resources public budget statement, the PBS. And there was nothing about space in either of those documents, nothing of significance. And that's an indictment on the government's mindset about space. So I think that, once again, this is a process of education and communication on the part of the commercial space sector, the space policy community, and the civil space community in terms of, you know, academia and the diplomatic side of things. We need to get across to government that space really matters and that Australia has a fantastic future in space if government is prepared to take the risk and have some vision about the importance of space and invest in an effective way. And I think that, you know, I would imagine the Americans would welcome Australia investing more in space and doing more in space, both in a defence context, but also in a civil and commercial context, because our competitors are not the Americans. Our competitors are China. And we need to make sure that when humanity expands into space in the next two or three decades, it's not in a situation where China sets the rules, because then we are in a situation where they will dominate up there and we will be in a much more vulnerable position strategically as a result. They would seek to control the astro-strategic high ground, the control of cislunar space and lunar resources. We can't afford to allow that to happen. So therefore, I do think that Australia needs to work with the United States, work with others, to ensure that we can continue to lead in space rather than abandoning the space domain to authoritarian states.
Now, Malcolm, we've only got a few seconds left, but would you like to share with us any final thoughts on the future of Australia's space policy and its strategic importance?
Yeah, well, look, I think that we're just beginning what I would see as a new golden age of space. That basically will see humanity go back to the moon, establish that permanent human presence on the moon that ultimately expands over coming decades, go on to Mars, establish a foothold on Mars, and then go beyond Mars. I do not believe that we will be stuck on Mars and get no further. Obviously, to go further, to go out to the outer planets, is going to take a longer time. We're going to need to invest in new technologies such as nuclear power propulsion, sort of artificial gravity, all those sorts of things. But the longest journey begins with the smallest step. And so therefore, you know, we need to be part of that journey and we need to play a key role. And we've got so much to offer our partners in the international space scene to ensure that humanity gets started on this new golden age of space exploration. And Australia, I think, is an important player. We do have real advantages that we can benefit from and that we can ensure that others can benefit from. And it's up to us to make that single step and that long journey.
Well, thank you, Malcolm. That's Dr. Malcolm Davis, a senior analyst at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute here on The Space Show. And do look up his article on The Strategist. It was called Space and Australia, Opportunities in the Second Trump Administration. Well worth a read. Well, this has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie. On Mission Control, we have had Richard.